Hey, we're talking with Keith Brown, who's Zooming from, where are you right now?
I'm in New Jersey.
What city?
In South Orange.
Okay, how far is that from Mount Clair?
Maybe 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, because it seems like there's, like, every time I, like, talking to a jazz musician, they live in Montclair.
Yeah, Montclair. It's a lot of cats that live up that way.
And so I'm assuming, like, a lot of these great jazz musicians that live, you know, in New Jersey live there so they can play in New York and then come back to the affordable state of New Jersey, right?
The more affordable state of New Jersey. I don't know if it's affordable, but it's better for sure, yeah. Because, you know, I was living in New York for a while, but after a while, I just, yeah, I had to find a little break from my pocket.
Yeah, and so then comes the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're really tied into the New York community there. How are musicians handling this? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's not really too much that, you know, can be done. You know, still a lot of people trying to, you know, do more lessons and things online, just as far as, you know, making revenue. And I'm sure you've seen, you know, there's a lot of live streaming concerts and things like that. And yeah, man, that's really it, man. Just trying to stay positive and busy where you can. And just, yeah, I mean, there's really nothing too much more you can do in this situation.
And I guess it's not worth crying over spilled milk, but what all did you have planned originally, you know, for the spring and summer?
Man, just a few different tours, some stuff around the States and a few different things in Europe and whatnot. And I was supposed to have been doing my third recording at the beginning of April. But like I said, needless to say, with the pandemic and everything, it ended up getting canceled. So maybe if things let up a little bit, that still might be under the works at some point. But yeah, just waiting it out.
And you know, I hear from a lot of record labels and radio, you know, jazz radio people talking about how they're saying, like, we were going to send you this record, but we're not going to send it now, you know. And some of them are even recorded. They're in the can, but they don't want to put them out without being able to go out and play them, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know them. I played on a couple of recordings that I know were supposed to be released, but, like, I know that those releases have gotten pushed back with everything.
Yeah. And so did you have all your musicians lined up and the material ready to go for yours?
Oh yeah. I mean, we were pretty much ready. Everybody was in place and the material was pretty much done. It was just a thing of getting in there and getting it done. So yeah. So now I was talking to someone. Now it's like, by the time it happens, I'll see if the material I planned on doing is still, if it's still time for it to be done, or I may need to, you know, reconfigure some things.
Yeah, and you probably got time to write now, you know, and mess with stuff. Have you been doing any writing, and you know, with this downtime?
Oh yeah, yeah. Just like you were saying. I mean, not much else to do, so a lot of practicing and writing, and yeah, just coming up with different things. So,
who was going to play on the third record?
In theory, I came down and did a live at Lucille's. The trio that came with me, they were going to be the rhythm section, Desron Douglas and Daryl Green. And I had this great saxophonist, he's from the New Jersey, New York area, named Anthony Ware, who's going to be playing saxophone, and then this trumpeter, Marquise Hill, was supposed to be doing it as well. So yeah, hopefully when it comes time to reschedule it, everyone will still be available.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you feel about the Live at Lucille's experience?
Oh, it's great. I mean, that's a great, you know, setup and venue to do that kind of thing. You know, well, you know, I did one last year, I think, with my brother. So So that kind of broke the ice. So it was after knowing what it was going to be like a little bit, it was easier to come back and then do my trio thing.
And then you also debuted some new material of yours, right?
Yeah, we did a lot of it was somewhat of a debut of some of the things we were getting ready to record. So I think we played Nashville the next night. So it was kind of working out some of the kinks before we hit the studio. So now it's been so long, we'll have to work them out again.
Yeah, maybe get new kinks. And do you feel nervous at all when there's, you know, cameras? I mean, it's like a three camera shoot or four camera shoot, and you know that like this is going to be imprinted forever, you know.
You know, I think that beforehand there's some of that, but it's like once you're going, and you're able to be back in the music again. But between songs, sometimes, or maybe in the middle, you catch a camera out your side view, and it reminds you that you're on TV. But in general, once it's rolling, it's cool.
Have you been able to watch it yet or listen to it yet?
I have seen I haven't seen the finished product of it, but I've seen some of the initial footage and heard some of the audio as well.
What'd you think?
Oh yeah, I think it came out good. I think like I said, since we were kind of getting into some new music, I think that I'll be more disturbed by some of the things than anyone else, just because, you know, I kind of know what we were trying to get and some of the things that were happening or not happening. But maybe I shouldn't be giving all of that away. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, that's the thing about, you know, jazz musicians and people that play at your level. I mean, it just seems like to me you're always going to be like being able to fine tune it indefinitely if you have a certain skill level, right? But let's say the average audience member, they may not know if you know you hit a note you weren't hoping for, or you know everybody didn't come in exactly right.
Right. Yeah. So I'll just shut my mouth about that.
Yeah. Well, I loved every note of it, and one of the most interesting parts of the show too was. You did one of your dad's tunes and he was sitting like right in the front row. You know, it wasn't like he was in the back, but he was like right there. What was that like?
It was cool. Like I said, I mean, usually on each of my records, or, you know, even going back to when I was still in school and doing recitals and stuff, I always try to do one of my pop's songs or something that, you know, just kind of gives a little head nod to my pops in some way. So it's always nice to play some of his music. It's always a good challenge. But at least he was sitting on my back so I couldn't actually see him. So
yeah, well I was messing around with that song Cape Town Ambush at home, you know, just trying to like come up with a guitar part, and I was like, man, I would never play that in front of anybody. But I mean, to play it in front of the person that wrote it, I mean, it's like, it's a tribute, but for me, it would seem like it'd be a little bit nerve wracking.
Yeah. It's definitely both.
Yeah. Well, I thought that one came out great. And your dad just retired from UT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has he said anything about that? You know, it was for me, it was like, it was really kind of sad because, you know, there's so many things going on right now that kind of making me sad, but that was one of them. Because it was like him and Mark both, you know, have done such incredible work for decades with so many students. And then for it to all end without any sort of celebration or, you know, official farewell, it had to feel weird.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, I definitely think for him that he was ready for it. You know, I mean, you know, he's had some, you know, health issues on and off. So I'm sure he's looking forward to just kind of be able to, as much as I know he loves teaching, but to focus on himself for a while and you know, get kind of focused on his own health. But yeah, like I said, maybe one of these days things cool off a little bit and find a way to circle back around to that. Because, I mean, I know, myself included, even not necessarily going through school, but just, you know, have definitely been strongly touched and influenced by his teaching and what he does. So, and I know that it's countless others. You know, so.
I'm really curious about what you're going to call the. Have you got a name for the third album? You know, what's after the journey? You know,
I'm not set on a name, and that's always a thing of discussion. So one of the things that we did at the Live at Lucille's is a take on this Fats Waller tune, African Ripples, and as I was initially planning this album, everything was kind of built around that song and whatnot. Like I said, we didn't do everything that I was planning on recording because I was probably going to do some type of arrangement of some R&B stuff. I feel like that's some stuff that I grew up in and I can never get too far away from it. But even with that song, African Ripples, as I was writing a lot of the music, I feel like that, especially with jazz and most American music, it's like that rhythm and that beat, that African thing is always a part of it, no matter, you know, if you get to the R&B and jazz and all of that thing, those links to that African feeling is always there. So that's kind of where I was at the time. So I guess it just remains to be seen if it still comes out that way or it might get pushed back or whatever. So.
Yeah, well, that's it's really interesting. You mentioned that particular tune. I've always loved that song. And I've always felt that Fats Waller, you know, he was such a A-plus entertainer that I think sometimes his compositional skills and his playing, which was really brilliant, kind of gets overlooked. And that when you opened up with that tune, and I was like, oh wow, this is really great, because you know I always felt like he in a way he kind of gets overlooked for that musician and compositional side.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I said, he has so many great tunes, and that as I listen to that song, it's like it's that striped piano thing, but it's such a soulful song. Just the harmonies and the way he plays those phrases that always spoke to me. I was like, man, I have to just mess around with this and see what happens.
I'm curious, you know, you play with Jasmine Horn. Has she ever covered a Fats Waller tune?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, we play so many songs and, you know, sometimes just call stuff on the fly, and I can't recall doing any Fats Waller tunes with her.
Yeah, I would just love to hear what she would do with one. I saw you with her, I guess, almost exactly a year ago when I was up in New York. The Jazz Showcase, I think?
Oh, the, all right, the Standard.
The Jazz Standard, yeah. Showcase is a different city, I think. At the Standard, yeah. And that, man, that was such a great show. And you had... I'm trying to think who was playing drums that night, because it was a surprise that he was there. I think he was filling in.
It was probably Ralph Peterson.
Yes, that was it. Man, that was a great night. How is it playing in that band and with her? I mean, it just seems to me like a really, like an interesting mix of like a kind of a challenging thing, because there's, you know, like that song, like Stop and all that stuff. But also, man, it just swings so hard, you know?
Oh man, yeah. I mean, it's like you said, it's challenging and easy at the same time. You know, I mean, some of the music can be challenging, and you know, she's capable of going in all directions. So it's like you really have to listen to what's going on, because it's, you know, we may do something one way a bunch of times, but this time is different, and you just have to kind of be ready to go with the flow of it. But then it's easy because, you know, when you're playing with, you know, a whole band that's on, I think Ben Williams was playing with us that night, and yeah, Ralph Peterson, and I mean, that was just a treat. But it's like when you're playing with people who's as good, it's like, it's easy. All you have to really do is play and not mess up or get in the way. Just let it happen, and it's good.
Yeah, that was a fantastic show. You know, that when I that I was just up there a couple of days, and I just started having deep sadness when I left. You know, because like that night was that show, and early, before that, Brad Meldow was at the Village Vanguard, and then Harold Mayburn was at Smoke, I think. You know, at midnight, I was like, and of course I'll never get to see him again, but man, just all that stuff I love in one night, you know, it was incredible. So I imagine you get to see stuff, or before the pandemic, you probably got to see stuff, just constantly great stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, and I always, of course there's, you know, amazing world-class musicians everywhere, but that's always a special thing being here, is that there's so many of them in one place that, you know, any night, like you said, you see Busta Williams playing somewhere, and walk down the street and Herb Mayburn is playing somewhere. And so, yeah, I mean, it's real inspiring, and it keeps you on your toes.
What are some piano players that you've been able to see since you moved up there that have been really a treat to see live?
I say, as far as piano, I mean, and there's a bunch of them. One guy that I really love checking out when he's playing around is Sullivan Fortner. And up at Smoke for a while, Mark Carey was doing a like jam thing on Thursday, but he'd always went up with a set. And I always loved checking out Mark and Johnny O'Neill. Just him, whenever I can hear him play, I try to be there, man, because he has everything. It's like it's playful, but it's adventurous and intellectual, and everything that you need to know about the piano is there.
What's your favorite room to play in New York?
Oh, I can't say, I'll give you a couple, because there's not, I can't say I have a favorite, but I always like playing at Smalls. Just the environment, the atmosphere, it's always kind of has some energy to it. But there's a place that I play uptown with this saxophonist, Bill Saxon, which he has his own place uptown in Harlem. That, I mean, it's just a small little speakeasy place, but it's one of those things. I think it's, since it's so small and so intimate, it just kind of adds to it. And he's, I guess we were talking about other people, he's somebody that I love to play with, because he's just like kicking every single night. It's like you, it's always a test on your endurance and where you're at, because no matter what, he doesn't slow down. He's always in it.
And that's one of the things, you know, I went to New Orleans back in, I was December, and man, I just loved, you know, New Orleans and New York, because you get to hear these incredible musicians in these small rooms where you get to hear, you know, the instruments not so amplified through whatever. And like you could, like, you know, at the Standard, I could hear the sound of your piano. I mean, it was mic'd, but I could hear the natural sound of the piano, the natural sound of the drums. And it spoils me, man. I was like, I can't get enough of it, even though I'm not getting any of it right now.
Right, it definitely makes a difference.
Yeah. In fact, I just got, speaking of Smalls, I just got two CDs in today. Steve Davis Quintet, Larry Willis. But I mean, have you heard anything about when things might open up? I know like the Vanguard and Smalls are having these no audience shows. Have you heard anything about that kind of stuff?
No, I mean, I'm actually, tomorrow I'm playing one of those Smalls shows. With the bassist Desmond Douglas, it's his trio. So I'll be there with him tomorrow. But like as far as an actual show with an audience, I haven't heard anything about that. And unfortunately, I don't anticipate hearing about that anytime too soon.
Yeah, and just talking around people here, you know, especially for, you know, like festivals and things like that. I mean, I know it's going to be a long time, and man, it's a real bummer. You know, I've always loved music, and I've always loved live music. But I think, it's taken this to realize how much I do love it, you know, and how and what a hole it leaves when you don't have it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we wish you the best. I mean, you know, maybe when you come back with this third album, you know, African Ripples, maybe that's the name of it. I like that as a name. I know Nicholas Payton would like it, man. You know, it's like it because I think that's something that really, it seems to me, you know, I've noticed this among a lot of like jazz hosts that there's this real consciousness that's starting to develop among more people about seeing the history of this music and really being honest about how it came about and how it really started and the value of it all. So, I mean, again, you know, these are hard times, but at least, you know, I feel there are some positive things coming out in that regard.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, you know, I mean, it's, you know, for me, I'm using this time to really investigate a lot of the music that I've loved all my life and get real deep into it, you know, and learning to play some of it. And it's been real, it's rich, man. It's there's no richer musical history in the world, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, I mean, I don't see how anyone could argue it's not just as rich or deep as any classical or, I mean, everything you need is there as far as having facility to play your instrument and actual soulfulness playing your instrument. It all has to be there.
You know, there's never a jazz CD that comes in where the people aren't good players. It's just, you can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so many of them out there now. I'm sure it'll be a hard thing to find.
Well, Keith, man, it's been great to talk to you, and I wish you the best, and hopefully, you know, we'll talk again when things get back and that record comes out. I can't wait for it.
All right, cool. Hey, yeah, thanks for having me, man.